Everybody's phone's off, right?
Yep.
Hey, everybody. That is Gary Smith. That is Kaz Kenny.
Kapow!
And I am Eddie Bramble, and this is episode 23 of the Blackwater Nerds podcast.
Man, 23, man. That's crazy, dude.
Man, this is a lot of fun. Oh. Kaz, why don't you start us off with this week's fish
report? We ain't got no fish down here anymore. Then caught them all up, man. Thank God, man. We can go back to normal. Just kidding. All right, folks, here we go. Look, so the snakeheads, the spawn is underway. We got fry balls everywhere. We got pairs on the top everywhere. We got them still on nest. We got them pairing up, and we still got them getting ready to go to work. So you got a little bit of everything going on. So put your time in, fish around, check different areas. You know, if you're slow somewhere else, it might be because, you know, they're spawning. It could be something like that. So, again, folks, don't be afraid to open up your Google Maps. Look outside the box. Take your ride and get off them bridges. You know what I'm saying? There's lots of stuff out here that you guys are missing that you're just not seeing yet. This is a big, big county. Let's see, we're catching some speckled trout at night. We're catching some jumbo white perch. We're seeing the first few small bluefish starting to come in and around here. We've had a few croaker in a couple of the nets here. Not many at all, very few. But these trout this year are just unreal what's showing up in the bay. The quality of the trout being caught, I mean, we haven't seen nothing like this in a couple of years anyway. And we know last year that a lot of these fish came a lot further north in the bay, meaning cobia, red drum, black drum, trout, all that stuff, Spanish mackerel. I mean, they were all the way up the bay. So I think this year what we have is we have a lot of these same fish returning to the same spawning ground.
Right.
So, you know, keep this in mind. You know, when you're out there and you're catching these big trout and you got these females and things like that, if you're into them and you're getting a good grade of fish, man, throw them ladies back. All right, let them back in there, because keep in mind, these fish come back to that same spawning area every year. Go down to the Carolinas and they come back right to the same spot. Same with the drum. So we knew last year they came in the river. So I think we're going to see red drum back again this year later in the summer. We're going to see cobia again back here late in the summer. I think it's going to get salty again this summer. So let's get ready for that. On the crab front, everybody's asking about crabs down here in Dorchester County. We don't have many crabs. A lot of the crabs are on the shed. What crabs are not on the shed, we're just not catching. I mean, they went in the winter fat, came out fat, and the water on the bottom of the bay is just still god-awful cold, too cold for them. So we've got to get that bottom number up to like 65 degrees, 68 degrees to get these crabs moving. So I think that's going to come this week. So get ready. I think we'll start seeing some crabs around here. Other than that, I mean, you got catfish out to Corsi, you got catfish out at Aries, you got catfish out at Drawbridge, you got catfish out at Newbridge, so you got catfish pretty much everywhere. Just go out and have a good time. Don't be afraid to think out the box. Don't be afraid to try a new lure. Don't be afraid to take a ride 2 miles away from the bridge and look for a new spot, because there's tons of them around here. So that's where I'm at with the fishing report. Let's get this show rolling.
All right, so this week we've got Scott Sewell here from Maryland Bass Nation. Scott, how you doing today, buddy?
Going awesome.
All right.
Happy to be here.
Good, good. Tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm a...
go ahead and pull that mic up to you just a little bit closer.
I'm the conservation director for the Maryland Bass Nation. It's a volunteer thing I've been doing now for over 20 years.
Thank you very much.
I grew up in the outdoors, grew up on a little farm that had waterfront on it, and I learned how to fish, hunt, trap. I was a young man, and it's just stuck with me. Went into Scouts and earned my Eagle Scout rank in there. And my first merit badges, of course, were in nature and conservation and all that kind of stuff. So it's just stuck with me. Initially, I wanted to become a game warden when I got out of school. But I was riding by the state police barracks up in Bel Air one day, and it said State Police 1 mile with a sign that said join. And I'm like, well, wonder if they'll take me.
Why not?
So, yeah, I stopped in, got an application, and 20 years later, after working the road and attained the rank of sergeant, I was offered a position with the U.S. Marshals, and I jumped at that and worked there for a number of years. Then I got into corporate security. Then 2013, I pulled the plug on everything and said, I just want to fish. So
yeah. You deserve it, buddy. You deserve
absolutely
it.
Like that plan.
Yeah. And It's been all downhill ever since.
I bet all that. We're going to find it out downhill. It's been here in a minute.
Right. Oh, you'll catch someone.
Maybe we'll boss to call up and say, hey, where's that report I asked for last week?
You know. So, Scott, as a trooper, you're out on the road 20 years. That's a long time.
Yeah.
What any high speed chases that you remember? Any stories you want to tell us that are groovy about the state trooper running somebody down and getting their man?
There's just so many. I don't want to bore people with the old war stories, but yeah, I was in a couple wild chases, getting police cars rammed and wow. things of that nature. I had to get into a few tussles out there, which. You try to be as diplomatic as you can, but when you get a guy that says, I want to get locked up, and he comes up and smacks your hood and dents it and says, now lock me up, you know, you don't have much of a choice.
You're just being a bludge.
That's right.
Yeah, right. But no, I've always had the, what's the word to put it? I guess in the old Boy Scout, be prepared, helping the little old lady across the street. I've always wanted to help other people.
Yeah.
And I was very successful with that. I had very few issues when I was a trooper for over 20 years because I always stuck with that idea or the belief that you treat people the way you would want to be treated or you treat them better than you expect to be treated. I can remember locking a couple guys up one time. Guy said, man, you're the nicest cop that's ever locked me up. I said, well, you know, there's two words, dignity and respect. And everybody wants to have that, even... They may not deserve it, but if you treat people the way you'd want to be treated, I just found it, you're very successful in life. Yep.
I really like that motto a lot.
That's what I've done.
Yeah. You know, and I know we want to talk about fishing. We want to talk about all that. Let's talk about your little stint with the U.S. Marshals, and then we'll talk about some security that I know that you did. But let's talk about what you did with the U.S. Marshals.
Well, I was asked to take the position. It's an appointed position by the president.
Right.
And back in 1989, my congresswoman... time was Helen Bentley.
She's a good woman.
And I'd had a lot of dealings with her. I was active in the Fraternal Order Police and the Maryland Troopers Association and lobbying different bills about guns and things of that nature. I'm not a gun girl, right? Stretch the imagination. I mean, I have my own shotgun when I was 10 years old. I used to hunt and everything. But there was a bill in particular that I got, and I was a member of the NRA, and actually I resigned my membership over the fact there were armor-piercing shells. And the FOP, and there was a couple police officers killed up in York, Pennsylvania. That they were in an armored vehicle, and the bullets came through in a riot up there and killed an officer who I knew. So I wrote to the NRA. I wrote to Congresswoman Bentley. I actually went down to Washington and lobbied on that behalf. And actually, the NRA dropped their opposition to that. They were, you know, because I told them, look, I've been a member for a number of years. I'm a law enforcement officer. And the NRA is very supportive of law enforcement.
They are. Yeah, a lot absolutely. Of people don't know that.
You
know?
I'm a member again. I've been a member now for a long time. And I've donated money to some of their causes, their Legislative Action Committee and things of that nature, because I firmly believe in the Second Amendment. I think that's a vital part of our Constitution. And I believe it. Now, there's nutcases out there that shouldn't have guns. We all know that.
Absolutely.
But I think that's one of our constitutional rights that we need to protect. Because without that one, the other ones don't mean squat.
Right. So that was the Marshals. And then you got into some private security. I know that because my sister, the way that me and you connected, actually, I'll tell that story. So I reached out to Scott. Actually, I reached out to the Maryland Bass Federation on Facebook and let them know in 2013 that I was looking to join a club. And I was looking for openings. And somehow I got a message from you that you were in Essex, that you were looking for some members. And I joined the club is what ultimately wound up happening. And then I remember I was having a conversation with my sister, and she said, I saw a picture of you with a friend of mine, Scott Sewell. I said, how do you know him? She goes, he was security guard at the bank I worked at. I said, oh, how about that? So now we had a small world. And now I was even more attracted to you, not just as who you were, but as an angler, you know, because now I started looking at you, what you were about, things that you did. And, you know, I think the thing that I like and the thing that attracts me to other anglers is finding what I consider stewards to the to the fishing scene. You know what I'm saying? And I believe you're
and
one
I
of
like
them guys.
I like being described that way.
And I believe
I like being a steward of the environment of the fishing world. You got to balance rights of fishermen to be able to go fish. We don't want to lose any ground there. But without conservation and good practices to protect what we have, our grandkids may not have the opportunity.
I'm so glad to hear you
have.
Say this.
You know, so it's something I feel deeply about.
Absolutely.
It's cost me some friendships.
Absolutely.
You know, because I care about the environment, and somebody will say, well, you did this or you did that. And, you know. And I'm like, hey, man, if it comes down to our friendship or the health of the creek or the health of the fishery, you know, that's your call.
And I think Eddie and Gary, we can all talk about this because we deal with this on a daily basis, you know, because of where we are with the whole snakehead thing. And I agree with you. You know, I've said it 1,000 times, you know, if I'm looking at data and data says one thing, then I'm going to respond to what I see as data. I'm not going to respond to personal opinions. I'm not going to respond to what you saw in a pond or what you saw in one lake. I'm going to respond to data, and I think that's something that you had done. But real quick on that story about the club, you know, I joined the club, and what happened is I began to learn from what I considered solid anglers. You know, like, I knew how to fish. You know, I had some background and everything, but I had never really gotten away from just fishing alone, you know. And here now I had a group of guys. I had some companionship, let's call it, that was newly found, and I really liked it. And, you know, I stayed in MR Bass for, I think, 2 or 3 years. I think it was 3 years.
Even the last year you were with us, you didn't even fish with
us. The last year I was there.
I want to be a member.
Yep, the last year I was there, I paid my dues, and the way that that happened was I was going to leave, and I told you. I said, Scott, I said, you know, I'm not fishing any tournaments. I love being in the club. I'm so busy with crabs, but I at least want to pay my membership. And if you got a guy who wants a spot in the club, I'm willing to give that spot up if it would benefit a kid or something like that, like it's benefited me. And that's ultimately what happened the following year. You had a young guy that wanted to join, and I said, you know what, Scott, man, I'll always support the club. I'll always donate whatever you need. I'll come to the flea markets. I'll do whatever you need me to
and
do.
And you have.
You know?
You're a man of your word.
Yeah, yes. And I want to thank MR Bass for the relationships that I built there and the things that you guys taught me, because I probably had some abrasiveness or maybe some bad judgment, you know, about proper fishing etiquette on some things, you know what I'm saying? And you guys taught me a lot. That's the bottom line.
The whole premise behind MR Bass, which is short for Middle River Bass,
right.
I founded that club several years ago. And it was because I've been in a couple other clubs, and I didn't like the way they were being run. I didn't like the attitudes of people. They would be cocky. They didn't want to tell you anything. You know, what do you mean, where did I catch my fish? You know, and it's not that we give up every little secret we have, because every bass fisherman or every fisherman,
we all got a honey hole.
If they go out and find something, why should they share it with the world? Let, you know, like somebody said, spend time on the water and you learn. But we have members in our club and we have club tournaments. After a tournament, we'll speak, whoever won it, we'll get up in front of our group at the next meeting and hold up the lure, you know, something like this. Say, this is what they were biting.
See that there, Willie?
And, you know, it's refreshing because you don't see that in a lot of clubs.
You don't.
I have people come to me all the time and say, hey, man, you got any openings in your club? We have a 20-member cap, and I've got 20 right now. I've got like 3 or 4 guys that keep checking back. Any openings, because they didn't like the clubs they were in because of some of the stuff like that, you know. When I wrote the preamble for the purpose of our club, the first line in it says, the purpose of MR Bass is to promote good fishing, conservation, and fun.
Mm.
Fishing should be fun. If you're in a club and you're not having fun, and I was in a club where I didn't have fun. Because there's just bickering and everything going on. And people call MR Bass the Scott Sewell Club. And, hey, you know, I don't care. Because I'm very selective as to who is in our club. And, unfortunately, some guys who I like very much, we had to vote them out. Because they were just too darn competitive, argumentative. And that wasn't the purpose of the club.
Right.
You know, we want to promote friendship. We want to promote conservation. Our club, most clubs have and the Maryland Bass Nation, a 5-fish limit that they, you know, you bring in your best 5 and weigh them. Well, we do a 3-fish
limit. Yeah, I was going to say, you guys cut it back because of the heat and some other conservation things.
Yeah, to try and help, because You don't want to haul around five bass in a live well all day when it's, you know, 90-degree water temperature.
Right. I think we've all had that lesson of time or two.
And they won't survive. They may be alive when you weigh them in. They may have a fin kicking and whatnot. But then it's a thing called delayed mortality.
Right.
You know, you dump them in the water. Oh, yep, he's okay. But then, you know.
And I think that was one of the biggest complaints of a lot of the bass clubs and tournaments here in the last couple of years is, you know, not so much them, but the public coming after a tournament and saying, hey, there's 20 dead bass floating here. And then guys say, what's the big deal? We caught 300 in the tournament. Yeah. What's 20? You know, 20's 20. I don't care where you're from. So I really respect the fact that you guys took that stance and went to three bass. And I think a lot of other clubs, a few of them have followed in your lead also. You know what I'm saying? So
we just had a bunch of guys get together yesterday up out of Havity Grace fishing the flats. And they said, why don't we do that MR Bass three fish limit thing? I said, that's great. Mm. And it got warm yesterday.
It was.
It was warm today.
That sun come out and it was hot. And I was glad to get off the water when I did.
So the Maryland Bass Federation, you've been a longtime member of that. But you hold a conservation position, which is very important to the regulations that are introduced to the state, you know, as far as for the black bass program and things like that. I know you work with Joe Love a little bit and some other people. Yeah. So let's talk about, as a conservation director, what you do as that guy. What do you do?
Sure. Well, it's, like I said earlier, it's voluntary. Nobody gets paid in this thing. I get calls from folks all over the state. If they see dead fish, if they hear rumors about illegal activity, if there's a fish kill, I respond. And I try and do the best I can with my investigative skills I learned over the years. What caused that fish kill? I'm not a biologist. I'm not a scientist.
No, you're not. But you're doing an amazing job and have done an amazing job with Middle River.
Of experience. Well, not quite 69, because I guess I was about five when I caught my first fish. And it was a bluegill, by the way. As most people, I think their first fish is
a good
bluegill.
That's what mine
was. A piece of worm in a bobber. Yeah. But I try to, my mind's like yours, constantly going. I laid my head on a pillow at night, and I'm thinking, what can I do to help, you know, promote bass fishing or to help the environment? Where can we do a project that would help the bass population? What can we do to get more kids involved? You know, and it's an addiction, I guess you might say.
It definitely
always
is.
Worrying about conservation and how it impacts the environment and the fish populations. So I've come up with ideas to do structure placement.
Let's talk a little bit about what you guys did down the National Harbor. Let's talk about, you know, I posted those pictures on your preview, you know, about the habitats that you guys were building there. So, yeah, talk a little bit about some of that.
Myself and a very good friend of mine who I fish with all the time, Dick Barrick, who's good the second vice president of the Maryland Bass Nation. He's also a membership director. And him and I fish team tournaments together. We were having lunch one day. And we were, you know, like brainstorming. He's very conservation-minded also. And we're brainstorming about maybe doing something on the Potomac River because sometimes I live right on Middle River.
Right.
And I get feedback, oh, you're just doing it because you live there and, you know, you're doing stuff for Middle River.
I've seen you do a lot more than just Middle River.
Oh, yeah.
I've done River, stuff on Potomac the River, tank, Susquehanna.
Yep, everywhere, all over the state. So, you know, I said, you know, this National Harbor, that's a big outfit. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they'd be wanting to, or if they would be open to sponsoring a project down there, because that area, for some of the old timers listening, Smoot's Bay, it was called back then, that used to be a hot spot for bass fishing. I mean, there'd be tournaments launching out of Smallwood and Mattawamon Creek, and the guys would race to get up there to South Point, right at the entrance there. And when they built that thing, all the shoreline structure, like trees and stuff laying in there, were all pulled out. That's not aesthetically pretty when you're building all these new buildings and the big Ferris wheel that they have there.
I mean, that's not a natural harbor. That was actually made.
That was a quarry at one time, but it was awesome bass fishing there. I'm talking 25 years ago.
I remember as a kid, and I'm 45 years old, I remember reading about Smoot's Bay and all that stuff back as a kid. And I think it was called the Fisherman Magazine was the circulation that was here back then. I couldn't wait to open up to the Potomac section of, you know, the bass fishing, because, man, that's all you saw was them giant bass back then. You know, I was like, oh, my God, I can't wait till I'm old enough to go there one day, you know. So
anyway, we said, well, let's give it a shot. So I made a phone call to Joe Love, who I've known since the day he was hired.
We love you, Joe.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. And Joe's progressed a long way since he first started.
Yes.
I think he's really come around and really into it now. And we also contacted the folks who were running National Harbor, and we told them what we wanted to do. We said, hey, you know, it'd be good PR for you. We want to do a partnership with National Harbor, Maryland Bass Nation, and DNR. And they jumped right on it. They kicked in $10,000 to help pay for materials. And they provided a tractor. They had a guy to run it.
Oh, wow.
And in some of the pictures you see where we, and they also collected all this driftwood, trees and stuff. And we went out and bought wire and drills and stuff and went down there with our chainsaws and cut them and made this structure. And then we made these big concrete anchors for them. Dick Barrick is an engineer, and he figured out how much weight we would need to keep them there. And we had to hire a barge, and we built them right there on their site. Barge took them over and had a crane, lifted them, and put them in the water.
Wow.
And the funny thing is, that's been, I think that was 2017. I haven't fished over there yet since we did that.
We should probably take a trip down there, huh?
Yeah, to see how it's doing. Maybe somebody that's watching can say if they've been in there. And, you know, it's got to help, because the area where we put them, it was clean, just like a bottom. It's a hard
bare
surface.
Bottom.
Bare bottom. No structure. No place. And bass, as most folks watching know, are structure oriented.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, if you got a bass in a swimming pool and throw in a quarter, come back later, he'll be sitting next to that quarter laying there.
And it's not just bass. I mean, well, striped bass, same way. Look at the gas docks for years.
Right.
And it's the only structure on that side of the bay for a long stretch. And look, that was the place to fish.
Yeah.
When you could fish it. Scott, I just got to say this. I've been sitting here listening to you, and you've been doing this for 20-some years, volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Most people wouldn't volunteer as a taster at Breyer's Ice Cream for 20 years. You know, that's impressive.
Oh, I don't know about that. I might volunteer for the rest of my life at Breyer's Ice Cream. I don't know what you're talking about, Gary. I might be in diabetic coma, but I'll be down here shoveling my face.
You know what I'm saying? That's impressive. Most people don't try to get people to pick up trash 2 days in a row.
Yeah.
It was crazy, because when I met him and my sister was telling me things about him before we even really like knew one another or anything, I was pretty shocked to hear the things that she said. You know, I was like, really? That guy does all that for free? That's crazy. You know?
You know, there's this, I've been blessed.
Okay? You have?
I've led a, I don't want to say a storybook life, but I'm not a drinker. I don't smoke. And I've been very fortunate. My home is paid for, my boat, car, truck, everything paid for. So I don't need to work. I'm retired, and I don't have much money come in every month, you know, through Social Security and reduced. I didn't get my full 25-year retirement state, but it pays the bills. And so I'm just feel so blessed to be able to go out, and I get out on the water, and I look around. I look at the birds. I listen to them. I look at the beautiful, you know, the resources that we have here. And I just feel an urge to give back, to make it better.
Yep.
And I think that's what drives me. I go out fishing. Hey, you want to catch fish? But I don't catch any fish. I still come home and...
Oh, man.
I thank God at night saying, thank you for giving me a...
You know what? This is the perfect opportunity for the story. So me and Scott, we have a very special story about a day on the Susquehanna River. And you were saying you still got guys asking you about the guy screaming in the back of Furnace Bay, right? So we had 3 o'clock?
Something like
that. I think our weigh-in was 3 o'clock. Yeah. And it was like 2:37. And you said, man, we got 20 minutes. We got to get back there so we're in there on time. We don't get no penalties. I didn't have any fish. I could care less where we were late or not. We could have stayed till dark. You know what I'm saying? I was good to go. I mean, you could drop me off on the bank and come back and get me at night. I'd have been fine. But anyway, Scott was picking everything up, and I looked, I said, I guess we're done. He goes, well, I'm going to clean everything up. He said, you got a couple more casts you can make. Why don't you go make a couple casts over there and see if you can pick something up? I said, all right, I'll go ahead and try another cast. I turned around, I undid my rod that I just put up because I thought we were going in, and I reattached my 7-inch Zoom June bug U-tail worm on the Kaz rig, threw it back out over there next to this dock, and Scott's kind of bent over packing up stuff, and I'm watching my line fall, and this is where I really was. It was the end of the day. I'd caught no fish all day, and I was okay with that. You know, I got to spend a great day on the water with Scott. We had a good time. We went all over the place. We burnt all kinds of gas, and we drove 50 miles, 60 mile an hour across the water, and it was scary sometimes, you know, but that's okay. So I fired that lure in there, and it started to fall, and I see my line going off. I looked over at Scott. I said, man, I think I got one swimming off with it. And I set the hook, and I felt the weight of it. I said, oh, good God, it's a giant, man. And he turned to look, and we're both watching. And right next to the dock, man, you see this big 6.5-pound bass come up, shaking his head and go back down. I panicked, shoved my rod down in the water, said, get the net, don't miss this son of a gun, man. And he comes over, and anybody fish with Scott, you know, he shakes a little bit when he's fishing, you know.
I get it.
So he's out there holding the net, trying to get him, like, man, please don't drop the net, man. Stop shaking, man. And sure enough, man, that thing went right in there. It could have been no more perfect. And we lifted that net up, and we set it in that boat. And I think me and you just looked at each other like, holy, did that just happen after everything I just said to you, man? And it did. I mean, it seemed like forever, you know. And if I, screaming ain't even the word, people, okay? I was just yelling and screaming, man, never give up. I mean, as loud as you could, thanking God, man, one more cast. That's what it's all about. You know what I mean?
And that was a trip I'll never forget.
Oh, man.
You've got certain things that happened. That's one of them that I'll go to my grave and remember that day. It was awesome.
I couldn't believe it. I come back in there, man. Them guys like, man, when did you get that one? I said, I just got it just now, 5 minutes ago.
Hey, how'd you do? One fish.
Look
at this sign.
I know. I did get a lunker check, and I did get some money for my one fish. But you know what, man? I was okay, even if I didn't have anything. Like you said, them guys, good group of guys, and man, every time we was in Havre de Grace, we was always raising hell. And I think in that tournament, weren't we fishing with, like, another club, too? Is that what I remember?
It was the club challenge.
That's what it was, the club challenge. That's right. I couldn't remember that.
Our guys versus another club.
That's
cool.
Okay, so let's start getting – how are we running on time?
Oh, you're good.
Okay, so let's start asking some tough questions.
Oh, boy.
All right, so we know that you're on Middle River. We know a lot of folks are up there. And snakeheads. Let's just say it. Snakeheads. Let's talk about snakeheads, Scott. So what are you seeing in Middle River, the Bush River, and the places that you're fishing? And what I want to know is, what are you seeing this year versus last year versus the year before? I mean, this has blown up really fast. And this year it's blown up even, I mean, way, way out, you know? And we're seeing numbers like Blackwater now in places in less than 5 years. And we got 10 years here. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I tell people, and I started raising my own concerns about 3 years ago when they first started showing up. And I took a lot of heat. Saying, oh, you know, it's another game fish, and, you know, you're blown out. I caught a snakehead and a bass side by side, and all this stuff. And I said, I'm really concerned because, number one, these things reproduce 3 or 4 times a year. Last fall, I was fishing Halloween down here off the Nanticoke River, and I saw balls and balls of bait fish. And I'm like, and cast over there, and I caught a snakehead about 9 pounds. And I'm like, this is incredible this time of year. You know, we're used to, we've all grown up with the fish spawn in the spring or late winter with perch or, you know, early spring, the bass around May through June, bluegill. To my knowledge, we don't have another fish that does that.
Right.
So I noticed in my own creek, Hogpen Creek, which I've made famous on Facebook, I hear running to people all the time. It's, oh, Hogpen Creek. You know, where is Hogpen?
We love your videos. We love your videos, man.
So I started noticing last year, they were on my, I have 100-foot of shoreline there. And it's not a real pretty shoreline because I put little trees and brush piles all along there to benefit the environment, you know. And I started noticing snakeheads hanging out there. Now, let me back up just a little. For 26 years, I've been there now. We built the house, tore down an old shore home, built the house, put moon launching ramp in and everything. I mean, it's a bass fisherman's paradise, my house. So I would feed the minnows. I'd give them bread every night and the bluegill and what would come up. And I've had thousands of minnows always along my shoreline.
And bluegills also.
I put grasses out there and all. I got rock jetties along my shoreline so that the minnows could hide. And about June of last year, no, earlier in May, there was only like a handful of them. Yet I had these snakeheads swimming all around, just cruising by, spawning right there. And I noticed the minnows were few and far between. So I went out of my pocket and bought some.
I remember. You had me meet you up there at Kent Island.
From you.
I met you.
I went over to Bowie's Bait and Tackle, bought some from them, and I would release them. And then come June, not a one. But what did we have as never before? Snakeheads. There's a young man up the street from me likes to fish off my pier. He caught 12 of them last year off of my pier alone. This year.
How many did we catch the year before last year off that pier?
None.
Zero.
Yeah.
That's all. None. I just want to say that.
Right. In 26 years, never a one. So you could jump up to 12. This year, again, no minnows anywhere. I did have a young man come and bring me quite a few minnows, you know, and he released them. I haven't seen them since. And I've got all kind of places where they can hide along my shore. Like I said, rocks, brush piles, grasses growing, the kind along the shoreline, not out in the water.
Right, where they can hide from most fish.
Correct. Right. And they're just not there. But I've seen more snakeheads in that creek this year. Just the other night, my wife and I were sitting out there. I'd been out fishing all day, and we just wanted to sit on the pier before it got dark. And they were coming up. You know how they come up, grab air.
Yep.
Or there was a couple of them, you know, doing their little dance paired together.
Up, right.
Yeah. And I was just too lazy to go get a fishing rod and throw at them. But I found that when they're in that phase, they're very hard to catch.
Absolutely.
Once they start to pair up. So now, and another thing, I always had, because when I built the house, I did what was called a shoreline enhancement project. I brought in 3 10-wheel loads of sand and had it dumped there and spread out. And we planted these special grasses that I got a wetlands permit from the state to do all this because I wanted to have a living shoreline.
Sure.
And the bluegill loved it because they would come up there and spawn. I would have anywhere from 60 to 80 bluegill
beds. I remember.
Right along there. This year, the last low tide, just a couple days ago, look, I had less than 10. I'm like, I've been here 26 years. I've always had 60 to 80, sometimes more, you know, making them beds all along the shoreline. Where have they gone? What has increased in number and what has decreased? The snakeheads are everywhere. The bluegill now are starting to disappear. And I am just very concerned. The other day I went out and fished in Hogpen Creek. In sight of my house, there's a tree that had fallen down, and I saw something there. I looked, I counted 6 snakeheads in one tree.
Wow.
You know how they sun themselves just below the surface. Then, of course, they go down when you come around. But, and already this year, I've caught 2 in Hogpen, one or two in Frogmorter. Saw a huge one in Frogmorter the other day. I thought it was a log until it took off. That thing must have been. It looked like it was 3 feet long. I'm like, how did he get so big so fast? And then talking to you and reading about it, you're saying how their growth rate.
A lot of protein in minnows.
That's exactly right.
Minnows and everything else that they eat. Yeah. So I'm very concerned, as I said 3 years ago in my post on Facebook and last year. And like I said, I've taken a lot of heat from a lot of guys.
We all have.
I stand by my guns that I am still very concerned about the overall, the populations, what's the word I'm looking for, you know.
The increase in abundance of the snakeheads versus the decrease of the other fish.
Yeah, and just the natural environment that we grew up with.
right. with bluegill, perch. We have crappie around. And the minnows, the bull minnows, the killifish. They're just not there.
I wonder about the pickerel. Like, I haven't talked to a lot of guys up there, but I know that Middle River's, you know, got a lot of pickerel in there if you know where to find them at, you know.
When we had that big fish kill in Middle River in 2015, I couldn't believe how many dead pickerel there were.
People don't realize how many are there.
Day. I was retired, so I was going out every day looking around, trying to help, you know, the state finding numbers and trying to get to the cause of that. Which I really don't get into the cause because there's a lot of.
I was going to ask that hard stuff. Question, but I decided to leave that to the side for today.
Yeah. The pickerel have not come back. Now, the bass, I've started a program actually before the fish kill.
I want to talk about the stocking program.
Yeah. I started that after we had a fish kill back in 2000, 2001. And I work with DNR stocking small fish in there. And the numbers were coming back. I mean, in the 90s, there would be bass tournaments out of the Gunpowder State Park.
Oh, no, they had a classic there in 92.
There'd be 91.
91.
Yeah. There would be like 80 boats in a Bass Nation or BFL tournament out of there. Half of them would run to Middle River.
I know.
Because they were getting bigger, better quality fish. Now, nobody runs the Middle River. I mean, and in a way, it may be good that we're stocking fish, and the fish will grow and get reestablished. See, the thing about Middle River, bass fry, they can't tolerate more than about 6 to 8 parts per thousand of salt,
right?
The salinity content. So even though the fish may try and spawn, make the beds, and you know, do their thing, the fry don't live if we get like a couple weeks without rain and that saltwater line moves up. Middle River, from that point over to the eastern shore, like just below Fairley Creek, that's about the line, I call it the line of demarcation, where north of there and up towards the flats, the fish can thrive. South, it's just too salty.
Right.
However, it's been proven that adult bass can tolerate up to 15, 16 parts and grow and get big. So it seems like a natural to stock fish there that are already bigger fish. They're not fry, and they grow and they multiply and they flourish. And it's been coming back. I posted some pictures last year of fish I caught in Middle River. But what we're not seeing is small fish anymore.
The smaller bass.
Yeah.
Which is what we're missing here. And that's so what exactly we try to explain to people, you know, that we don't have the smaller fish, which are predominantly male fish. You know, I mean, those smaller ones, they're the ones building the beds for the big girl. If they ain't there to build that bed, you got the same problem that we got here, which is, here's mama swimming up the river looking for somewhere to drop her eggs.
Right.
I can't find a boyfriend here. I can't find a boyfriend here. There ain't no nest over here. There went all my eggs out in the middle of the river.
And you know, it's funny. You know? I talked to Joe Love about, I try to check every creek every year. I'll run over to Fairley Creek, Wharton Creek, Still Pond, work my way up just
because. I love Still Pond.
Years ago, they were the place to go. They're not anymore. And like Fairley Creek.
A lot of snakeheads in Still Pond.
Back in the 90s, running to Fairley Creek and finding some nice populations of bass. About 3 years ago, I only caught one bass over there. It was a female. She was full of eggs. And I asked Joe Love, I said, you know, what happens if she can't find a mate? He goes, you know, without a male.
Same thing here.
She's just going to drop them, and there's not going to be any reproduction.
We talked about that before with when Joe was on the podcast and how many eggs they found during their survey with the nets. It was an unreal amount.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel, now there's people who will come in here and argue with me till they're blue in the face, that snakeheads don't have an impact.
Sure.
But facts are facts. Snakehead numbers are up. Minnows are gone. Bluegill numbers are down.
Perch.
I mean, where are they at?
I got a guy in Susquehanna that just sent me a message today, and he's like, I got to tell you something. So I've been logging my catch this year versus last year, and I'm way down. Way down. So, I mean,
And there are other factors. I understand.
Sure. Absolutely. There sure. always is.
Quality, sure. you know, successful spawns, weather. But this is a known factor, a known threat, in my opinion. In my, I hate to say professional opinion, but in my experiences in a lifetime of studying bass, studying their habitat, studying their actions, and I'm very well up on the snakeheads now, too. I was asked to serve on a committee back right after the first snakehead was found in Crofton. I was actually down at a, as part of my duties with, or activities with conservation director with BASS, every other year they put on a conservation summit at the Bassmaster Classics.
Yes.
And they put us up and we have classes and training. I was down there in 2002, I believe it was, and I was interviewed by someone from the Baltimore Sun when they used to send reporters to those things because it was a newsworthy event. They don't do that anymore.
Right.
I don't even think they have an outdoor column anymore. Nothing about fishing. But anyway, I digress. And she came up to me and said, what do you know about the snakeheads? Do you think it's going to be a threat? And I said, well, to my knowledge, they you know, drained the pond and put poison in there. They sanded it, and they got them all. And at that point, a couple were starting to show up in the Potomac.
Right.
And it wasn't very long after that, within the next few years, that the Potomac fishing took a dump. I mean, the guys were complaining. I can remember guys.
Whoa, wait a minute. I thought that snakeheads and largemouth bass go to the Lowe's movie theater down there in D.C. and share popcorn and candy all night. Wait a minute.
And that's what you hear from people. But again, there may be other factors.
Sure.
And like I said earlier, I'm not a biologist. I'm not a scientist. I'm looking at a practical thing as a fisherman and someone who reads and studies bass. That snakehead numbers were coming up in the Potomac and bass numbers were going down. And the only reason, in my opinion, that the snakeheads haven't totally taken over the Potomac River is because there are so many fishermen out there who are catching and keeping and bow fishermen at night are thinning out the numbers. Yeah. Now, if they weren't doing that,
it would be a disaster.
It would be. And largemouth bass is the single most pursued sport fish in Maryland. It's funny. Some people don't know that.
In the country, I would say, too.
Yeah. Some people think Maryland because our state fish is the rockfish and because the rockfish events get so much publicity. But there, on any given day, there are more guys out fishing for bass than any other individual species.
Go down Smallwood Park and look at the parking lot.
Exactly. You know, just go out in the Midwest.
Yeah.
I mean, golly day, that's what there is out there to fish for.
Right.
All the lakes and reservoirs and all that stuff are bass.
Yeah. So I think, and DNR, to their credit, we used to have once a year a black bass roundtable where a bunch of folks would get together and talk about issues and come up with ideas of what to do. When the bass numbers were really down in the Potomac River, and some people were pushing for vast restrictions. One of the guides down there wrote to DNR, a gentleman I respect very much, but I think he went overboard in his things and what they should do. And DNR started, I think because they wanted to do something, said that they were going to impose a 3-fish limit, or only 3 fish could be
in the Potomac. Over.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember reading about that.
Bass was scheduled to have an Elite Series tournament down there.
Right.
And I got a call from the National Conservation Director. He goes, Scott, he said, what's going on there? He says, believe me, the head honcho is here. Said if that goes through, they're not going to have their tournament there. And an Elite Series has over 100 boats.
Yep.
Brings in
a couple million dollars.
At least. To, you know, the local economies. So I said to the then the head of fisheries, I said, you know, Maryland has a crab subcommittee or committee as part of the Sport Fish Advisory Council or committee. That, and I said, I know rockfish are there. I know they have them for oysters and other stuff. We really need to have one for bass. And they agreed, and they created the Black Bass. It was originally called Black Bass Advisory Subcommittee, of which I was asked to serve on, where I applied and I was selected. Now it's the Black Bass Advisory Committee. They dropped the sub, and we report right to the Maryland Sport Fish Advisory Committee. So, and we stopped that thing that they wanted to do with the only one fish over, you know, 3 pounds, or I forget the exact word.
I think it was 20 inches or 18 inches or something like
that. It was something like that that the pros said, you know, and BFL also said, we're not going to come to Maryland either,
right,
you know, for something like that. And but they were just trying to find ways to help the Potomac. And at that time, like I said, snakehead numbers were up and bass numbers were down. I mean, I fish a lot down there, and I was catching some huge snakeheads.
I know. I remember.
You know? So I can't prove that the snakeheads have caused reductions in bass.
Sure.
And people say, oh, you're just worried about it because they're eating your precious bass. You might have seen some of the
oh,
posts,
yeah, I see them,
responses to my post.
Sure.
The internet trolls.
And,
that's right.
Even if they're not eating bass, which I'm sure they do, small bass. As a matter of fact, I think one of the pictures that you have a picture of a small bass. That
I have a picture of a 13-incher in its stomach. That's what I got.
they're competing with the same number of, you know, of other fish that they eat, other, you know, food. So now you got two of them fighting over the same number.
Not just that, but now you got two fighting and one reproducing four times a year versus right. one reproducing one. This is
and
the equation that,
one,
that people don't want to talk about.
Right.
You know?
That one may have hundreds of fry
right.
hatch.
Plus the survival rate.
Where exactly. Whereas the snakeheads, my God, I've seen thousands of fry. I mean, people call me and they say, Scott, what? Come down to my house. Look out here.
I was reading some data last night.
Fry balls as big as this room.
Right. This is what the data said. You know, I was trying to find out what the survival rate is across the board, not in a lake, not in a pond, an average, what the survival rate of largemouth bass fry was. It is 0.01 to 0.05, not even a percent of a percent, okay? So just think about that, people, one time, and think about that snakehead with a fry ball as big as a truck being guarded by two parents. And nothing wants to give them any trouble because they know if they get bit, they're either going to get scarred or an infection. Something bad's going to happen to them. Think. The data doesn't lie. That's all I'm saying. And what, back to what you say, what I've seen here, I'm not a biologist. I ain't no scientist. It don't take no rocket scientist to watch what's happened here in a spot that you fished 10 years ago that you caught 20 bass. And a spot you fish that same spot today, and you catch 100 snakeheads on a good, good, good day.
Be interesting to ask, and I'm sure some of them are going to see this. The bow fishermen in the Potomac and some of the other places, when they're bow fishing, how many bass do they see?
I
mean, it's perfect time. It's night. They're dormant. They're sitting there. How many bass compared to how many snakeheads do they see? I'm sure we don't have any previous data because nobody was bow fishing the Potomac before
right.
the snakeheads came.
So look, Sean, Kirk, Russell, Wayne, all you guys, when you guys are out there and you're shooting bass, that's what I want you to start
they're
doing.
They're not shooting bass.
Or not shooting bass, shooting snakeheads.
yeah.
When don't shoot the bass. When you're out there shooting the snakeheads, do us a favor. Start looking and counting how many bass you're seeing in the area versus how many snakeheads you're seeing. That could probably help us a lot with some data that we're not getting.
True.
You know?
Yeah.
More data is always better.
Absolutely.
You know, it's I'm just thinking, I've never fished the Middle River, but over here, the Blackwater, I fished a lot when I was a kid, Transquake and Chickamauga, all those rivers. And you could go this time of year up in anywhere that there was just even looked like it could be a beach. You would go up there and you'd see bluegill and bass spawning.
Ain't none.
And I got the same thing this year, but it's in my pond. I don't see them anywhere. I'm out on the water.
Here's the deal. You go up above Newbridge on the flats up there, okay? When your people up there and that water's clear, tell me how many bluegill beds you see out there on that flat, because there used to be thousands.
Exactly.
And before the bluegills, there were hundreds and hundreds of largemouth bass
right
beds there in the same spot. And
yep.
You know that because you guys in your clubs have been coming down here fishing in tournaments. What is it called? Never on, that was, I love doing that
never
one with
on
you.
Sunday.
Never
we
on Sunday. I loved all them old dudes, man. You know what I mean?
Great
I was like the
guys.
Youngest guy the day I went. You know, I was like, yeah, this is awesome, man. But yeah, that's a good group of guys.
Big Blackwater Bridge. When I was a kid, Yes, when you went down there with worms and bobbers, man, and both sides of the bridge along the bank there, weren't any rocks there like there are now, which is better habitat. It was just a marsh, and they'd dig a little hole in the mud, and it was full of bluegills and sand there.
And not even when you were a kid. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, it was like that.
5, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. I got pictures 10 years ago.
They had bluegills when I was a kid, though. Well, they were more green. They hadn't turned blue yet.
That's good. I mean, that's a thing, honestly.
That's what we call
them,
sunfish back then. They hadn't quite turned blue.
Like the places that, like the salt marsh where I'm getting all them bluegills at that you see me. I mean, and just so you know, folks, those pictures that I'm putting on the bait boys are nowhere near the complex in Blackwater. So all those bluegills you see, and when you see a crayfish here and there, that's not Blackwater. We ain't got much of that over here. So I'm going over there trying to catch them, and I'm saving up hundreds of bluegills a week, and I'm bringing them back over here and cutting them loose, hoping that maybe it might make a difference. Probably won't, but, you know, I'm like you, Scott. The littlest bit of help, I think, makes a difference. Yeah. You know, even if one bluegill made it to 5 years old, man, hey, I'll be up in heaven rolling around saying, yeah, God, we did it, you know? So, but before I forget about this, I want to talk about your involvement with some other organizations, mainly the Wounded Warriors. I know that you do a lot with them guys every year down there on the Potomac. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the tournament that you guys do, and maybe some of the public might want to be interested in helping you guys out with that this year.
Yeah, it's the Maryland Bass Nation has partnered with the Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Paralyzed Veterans, that's what it was.
Yeah, and we always get volunteers, our guys, to come down and take out a veteran for 1 or 2 days out on the water. And it's so heartwarming. It just makes me feel so good to take a guy out, especially when the first time they catch a bass and they're like so excited and they say, I never caught a bass in a tournament before.
Right?
Yeah. And they have a chance to win some nice prizes, and they get a lot of good sponsors. Unfortunately, this year, because of the virus, they canceled their whole season.
Okay. Yeah. But we know that feeling.
Next year, we plan on coming, you know.
That's a shame. That's really a good thing you guys do every year. I look forward to watching that and seeing the pictures from that every year.
I put a lot of pictures out. We get a lot of guys from Walter Reed who are recovering that have lost arms, legs, or other injuries. And, you know, we have people help put them in the boat. Sometimes we have to be lifted and sat down, and they have to fish right from the console where they're sitting behind in the center of the boat. They can't climb up on the deck to really fish, but it's something I really enjoy doing.
And I think the greatest part of it is that they feel sense of purpose for the day out there with you. You know what I mean?
They all love it.
Yeah, man. I mean, like I've seen it. You know what I mean? I see how just the emotional connection is made when you guys do that kind of stuff. Yeah. More people should do those kind of things.
Just going for a ride in the bass boat. Yeah. And you hit the, you know, with a gas pedal, and somebody hits the gas pedal, and you take off in a boat and go 50 miles an hour. I mean, we were talking about Bruce Wooten. He told me one time one of the most memorable things he had was a lady, that older lady. And he took her fishing. She caught some fish, had a great day. And when she came in, he said, how did you do? She said it was great. But she was kind of hesitating. And Bruce said that she said, I was kind of hoping you'd go fast. I heard these things really go fast. He said, sit down, honey.
He took her for a cruise.
Yeah, he said she just lit right up.
Yeah. All right, so what do you think, Addie? What do we want to talk about next?
You got that rub in your hand.
All right, so, you know, we've been talking a lot about this rub that we're making for snakeheads, and we're finding out that it's good on all kinds of other stuff. Gosh, that stuff just smells hungry. Anyway, look, so we want to go ahead and extend this for another week on a name?
We're still working on names.
Let's go another week on a name. So, look, let's up the ante. Three bags. We're going to pick the winner this week. Get us a name. Put it in these comments right here on this podcast, what you think the best name for this new snakehead seasoning might be. And we've had some really good ones so far. Venom Dust
has been the best one so far.
Yeah, I kind of like that one so far. So work on a name. Let's get us one. And next Thursday, let's go ahead and pick our winner and give that away. What do you think, Eddie?
That sounds like a good idea. I think that's the right way to go with that. So, Kaz, you got any one more?
One more. Is anything else I want to ask Mr. Scott? Anything else you can think of, Gary, you want to ask?
I got something I'd like to add before I forget. We, as was alluded to earlier, I created a stocking program that We get donations, the Maryland Bass Nation, local businesses up there, anybody, a lot of individuals contribute. And we're able to raise a few thousand dollars every year. And instead of stocking little fry that can be eaten by just about any fish out there, we buy adult fish. I don't know if you can see that one picture there. They're like 12 inches or more.
Right.
They're expensive. Nice. Yeah. But we get
makes a difference
as many though. As we can, and we stock them. And I'm getting a lot of positive feedback from folks saying, man, I think I caught one of the bass you stocked. You know, so we're trying to build the rivers up. I put them in Middle River, Seneca, Gunpowder, Dundee, and you know, we're hoping to continue that program. We've had some good donations this year already. Of course, the virus shut down.
You can mark me in there. I know that.
And we will be doing that again this fall.
Fantastic.
And anyone who would like to help, feel free to contact me. Just go on the Maryland Bass Nation website, marylandbass.com, and we can always find something for you to do if you want to help out.
Only cost a buck to help. Only cost 50 cents to help. Don't be a cheapo, dude. Give them 10 bucks, man. Come on. Look, and here's a good thing, too, Scott. Them bigger fish you guys are stocking are probably a little less apt to be gobbled up by a snakehead as soon as they hit the water.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And they can eat snakeheads.
Right.
You know, the small ones. So that's about the only predator out there, except maybe some big catfish or the rockfish when they move up in the fall. And somebody sent me a picture of a great blue herring. An osprey that had a pretty good-sized snake head. Yeah. It was carrying, yeah, so yeah. That's good. You know.
I tried to get one the other day out of Taylor's Island. There was a bald eagle that was trying to get up in the air with this terrapin about, I ain't kidding you.
Oh, wow.
And he kept getting up, and he'd have it, and I said to my buddy, I said, get your camera. I think Patrick was with me, and we started running after it, man, and it just cut out of sight with the turtle, and it was so funny because the turtle was swinging in the air like just by its leg. It finally was able to get it by the one leg.
Wow.
You know, I don't think you could figure out how to pick it up. It kept grabbing the shell and then dropping it, and finally it was taking off in the middle of the air with the leg.
I found a lot of snakehead remains out in the marsh last year, second deer hunting.
Yeah, we've talked about it a bunch. Yeah.
We were over at Uncle Wayne's last week, and there was carp heads, there was snake heads, and there was, I think there was three or four snake heads, one carp head, and one, we don't know what the heck it was. So we know that the birds are getting them, you know. I think what we should do is maybe how they train these hawks to get the rabbits. Maybe we can start training hawks to get the snake heads. And, you know, if we get one of them to catch 100 a day and release 1,000 a day, man, we could be doing some. That's 10,000 a day.
Like Matt said, we got plenty of bald eagles around.
That's right. That's right. That's right. So one more is no. I don't really have much anything. But, look, get us a fancy name for that stuff, will you? Come on.
We're looking for a good name for it.
I know, man. Got to have something.
I know. Scott. Thank you very much for coming on, buddy. This was a great week.
Thank you for having me on, and thanks for all the fine work you guys are doing to get the word out to anglers and I don't think we mentioned, but they're great table fare.
Yeah.
They're delicious. Nice white flaky meat from head to tail.
I mean, here's the deal. Let's raise awareness, let's educate the public, and let's build a better angler.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Absolutely.
So, hopefully we can keep their numbers in check. There's no way we're going to be able to eliminate them. They're here to stay. But if anglers keep them, kill them, harvest them,
eat them,
give them to your neighbors, you know, I mean, plenty of people
try to
keep
their numbers in check.
Every little bit helps.
Yep.
So, well, Scott, thank you very much for coming on, man. This was
my pleasure.
Nice having you.
Thanks so much. Thanks for all your volunteer work.
So, for everybody, for Gary, for Kaz, myself, thank you all for coming, tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.